I was about to say, not only are you closing deals on a Friday, but this is also a little thing of a global pandemic going on, and you're still getting business, huh? Still working out for you.
Well, you know, there's companies that are very focused on continuing to grow. They just, that's their mindset. They're never going to give up. Mm-hmm. And they have cash because they're a successful company. So they see this as an opportunity to gain an edge because, you know, loyalties right now with companies are up for grabs.
It's true. That's so true. That's a great point, man. Loyalty is up for grabs right now. And you know, a lot of people, unfortunately, I feel like I talk to, because I'm in healthcare, and a lot of people are on defense, and they're kind of back on their heels and waiting to kind of see what happens instead of trying to create. And I think that's a great point about being on offense there. I like that insight.
Yeah. You know, going on defense is coming from a place of weakness, right?
Yeah, it's very true. You know, everyone says that one saying, defense wins championships. But when you look at it, really, there haven't been that many defensive Super Bowls, you know, like champions out there. Every blue moon, you have a group where they're on defense so hard that they actually win the actual, you know, chip. But you don't see that in like the real world, or at least in the sports world.
That's really interesting. I would really like to see some statistics on that.
Well, you know what, Dwayne? I want to welcome you on to the Sales Culture Podcast. Thank you for blocking off a Friday after you're kind of, you know, doing deals and you're running your own business. But thank you for your time this morning.
Well, you're welcome. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
So you know, I would love to kind of tap back into your origin story a little bit here. So tell people how you first got started in like sales. What was the first product or service that you were selling, or business even?
Well, the first product that I was selling were business telephone systems. Hmm. And that was 100% commission.
Oh, wow.
But I want to tell you, shall I tell you how I got into that?
Please.
Because I think that people can realize this. You know, a lot of salespeople end up in sales because they can't find satisfaction in any other job.
So true. Yep.
And they're at a barbecue and their Uncle Louie says, why don't you try sales until you figure out what you want to do with your life?
Yep.
And I did it a little bit differently. I graduated from college with a degree in performing arts. Hmm. And I went down to New York City. I graduated out of New Haven, Connecticut. I moved down to New York City, I got a job with a professional theater company, a touring company. Their name was the New Globe Theater. And now I'm in the theater. I'm in biz. This is what I studied. And after about 2 years, I found it wasn't right for me, and I didn't know what I was going to do. So I went back to my university, and I took an interest inventory, a personality inventory, and sales came up very strong in it for me. And at that point, I said, I'm not going to be a salesperson. They're a bunch of liars and self-centered people. And this counselor was great. She said, you know what? You can be an honest person and help people in sales and do very well financially and have some freedom. She said, I think you should check it out. And she recommended a couple of books. So I ended up reading these books, and I found that what she said was true. You can be very helpful and extremely professional. And I decided to go into sales, and I've been, you know, fundamentally in it ever since. The reason I'm going back to that personality test is because there are a lot of people that are struggling with what should I do? Mm-hmm. And those personality tests and interest inventories can really help someone point them in the right direction.
You know, that is a really good counselor, because I remember going to my counselor when I was confused, and you know, it took me on a whole different rabbit, you know, trail and of different career paths. And in my mind, I was always like, all right, I'll either do physical therapy or I'm going to do sales and marketing. I didn't know what about sales and marketing, but my mom was in it, and I'm like, she's, you know, a killer saleswoman, and I can just follow her footsteps, or I'll do something that just kind of really interests me, which is like how to train the body and everything. So, so. Talk about that personality test a little bit, if you don't mind. Like, what were some of the cues or things that your counselor saw in you as someone with an arts background and say, hey, you might want to think about sales?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the fact that I'm service oriented surfaced for sure. And I was very, one of the reasons I left the theater is because I wanted to earn a significant income.
Ah, yeah. Yeah. The whole lifestyle play. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that came through as well. And in sales, if you really apply yourself, you can do very well financially. And also my energy level was in line. My appreciation of business, how companies make money and how they operate, you know, that came through. And also I think my tenacity, I'm not one to give up. And I think you put those things together and I think, you know, it aligned with selling.
I have to ask you about a couple of those character traits. One, definitely believe that at least one of my biggest hurdles was just admitting that I wanted to make money, you know, like, because it seems so like negative, right? Like, it's like, oh man, you're being greedy. You want to go out here and try to, you know, take money from people. Well, that's what at least that was my mentality for a long time coming up until I admitted it. And I was like, you know, I do want to have a great lifestyle and I want to have a great earning. And I mean, so if someone has that roadblock of, hey, I don't want to be the greedy guy or whatever their mental, you know, fix is about that's off of trying to produce top earning. I mean, how do you kind of coach someone around that? Or do you? Or is it something that you just say, hey, this is not for you? And kind of walk away. Or there's more.
You're bringing up one of the most common and challenging issues in selling. Many of us were raised, and this includes myself, by our parents saying, you don't discuss finances with other people. It's not polite.
Right.
You don't ask anyone what they earn. You don't ask how much their car costs. It's just impolite. Don't talk about money. Mm-hmm. That's how I was raised. And I was raised in a very middle class, probably below middle class. So we didn't have a lot of money. So I grew up thinking that $100 was a lot of money.
Sure.
So when I started selling phone systems, it could be $20,000, $30,000. I couldn't wrap my head around numbers that big. It was a weakness that I had. And I also was uncomfortable in business conversations saying, you know, hey, Joe, have you got a budget set aside for this phone system? You know, Joe, when you were thinking of getting a phone system, roughly how much money did you think it would cost? Have you gotten some other proposals, Joe? What are their prices? Those are business conversations.
Right.
And I was very uncomfortable with that. And fortunately, my first sales manager was amazing. His name was Gary. And he helped me. He said, Dwayne, you have to get over this. Okay, it's okay that you're uncomfortable with this, but you have to understand it's a barrier to your success, not just in business, but in life. So you need to work through that fear. And you need to start having these conversations with people. And he said, I'm going to help you and we're going to role play. And he set aside time for me every week and we role played. I was the salesperson. He was the prospect. And he taught me how to have these discussions around money. And thank God he did, because if he didn't, it would have stunted my growth. Money is good.
Yeah.
You know, it helps you provide education for your children. It helps you grow. It helps you help other people. We need, you know, the thing with selling is we can really help people. And when we understand that and we fully accept that and we embrace it, now it's a matter of, I want to help as many people as I can.
Right.
And oh, guess what? The money will come along with it. You know, you talk to people like Oprah, Bill Gates, I'm thinking of the guy that owns Virgin Airlines.
Oh yeah. 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 Richard Branson.
You talk with those people and they will tell you that they never set out to make a lot of money. They set out to do something they were passionate about and to help people. And the money just started coming. And the more people they helped, the more money came in. And I think that is the healthy and gratifying mindset to have in sales.
It's really that, duality, isn't it? Like, you know, having that service mindset, but then also a performance-based mindset. And it's a really unique characteristic to kind of develop in people, it seems like. I've had a chance to kind of coach up a couple different sales guys, and, you know, and I'm learning to be like a better coach, because that's a skill set in itself, right?
Yes.
And finding people with both already developed is rare. But finding people with one aspects and then helping them evolve is an actual process. But you also mentioned something that your counselor pointed out about you, that you were tenacious. And yeah. I think that has to be one of the biggest skill sets, because even to work through your fears and learn through your fears takes a certain level of grit, right? So, I mean, yeah. How do you pull that out of people, or how do you maybe try to find that in different, you know, reps that you're possibly looking at trying to bring up and train up?
That's a great question. You ask really good questions.
I'm just curious. I'm asking selfishly.
That's a great question. So here's what I've learned. Yeah. Everybody is motivated.
Yeah.
Everybody. Some people are motivated to sleep in until 10 o'clock in the morning.
I love it.
Some people after work are motivated to go drink a six-pack of beer and then go and watch Netflix until 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's motivation.
Absolutely. Takes work.
Yeah. I mean, not that we all haven't done that, but some people are motivated to do that every night. So our job, I think, as a coach is to inspire people. The first thing we have to do is find out how are they motivated. That's their personal internal flame. And we can't really put that in someone. We can't motivate someone. We can inspire them to take action in a way that is gratifying to them. We can inspire them, if they want to grow and learn, to understand the areas that they can learn in. And then we ask them, would you like to learn this area? Would you like to grow, like to strengthen in this area? And if they're motivated to do that, then we can inspire them through helping them and talking with them and showing them the way and giving them great books to read and that sort of thing. You know, internal motivation is personal, and it's unique to every person.
It's very true. It's very true. You know, you're absolutely right about that, because it's timing, I would imagine, for that whole, like, motivation as well. You catch someone after they made a big investment and they're motivated to kind of pay off their house or their car, and then they're ready to run, you know? or if you catch someone whenever they're like, man, you know, they might have been a great salesperson 5 years ago, and now they're just like, I'm over. you know?
We change.
Absolutely. And, you know, talk about change. This is where I really want to tap into a lot of your wisdom with this. Times are changing. We're going through a really interesting shift throughout the world. We're doing this via Zoom. I love to have most of my podcasts in person, or, you know, try to meet people somewhere once I'm out traveling, and I haven't traveled in months. So it's a brand new world, right? And how do you think sales is going to evolve with this changing times? What's your thoughts with where COVID's taking people, and maybe how buying habits may be shifting as well?
You know, the honest answer is I don't know.
That's honest.
Honest. I mean, I can kind of speculate, but man, you know, what I can tell you is over the last probably 15 years, the number of salespeople in America is steadily declining.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, if you Google that and you do some research on that, you can go to the Census and you can go to government websites, and you'll see that the position of selling, there are fewer and fewer people in it. And I think that's a couple of reasons, and I'll try to tie this into your question. Number one, anything that can be sold on the internet that's transactional in nature,
yep,
that doesn't have a discovery and then a design and a build component, things that don't have discovery, design, build, I think they're going to be sold on the internet. So therefore, that takes reps away. And buyers today are so much more educated and savvy, they don't want to deal with salespeople. They want to deal with someone that can establish an equal business stature, a peer-to-peer relationship, and give them insights that are helpful to that prospect to achieve whatever it is they want. Those are the people they want to associate with. And that's another reason why the number of salespeople are going down, because a larger volume of the sales are continuing to be made by fewer people who are fully embracing the consultative selling model.
Right.
There's a lot of salespeople that are not rising to the new level of professionalism, and they're going to be eliminated from the system because they're not going to be viewed as someone that delivers value. So I think that is going to continue. I think the use of these Zoom calls is going to continue. It's going to save people money from getting on airplanes. It's going to save a prospect is more willing to sit in their own office and talk with you on Zoom for 10, 15 minutes because they can get rid of you easily.
Yep.
If you're physically in their office, it's harder to get rid of a rep that you don't want to be with.
Right.
So I think that this technology is going to continue to be prevalent. And beyond that, man, I don't really know.
Well, I mean, I think you bring up some great points. I mean, having these face-to-face meetings and just qualifying, this is a beautiful tool for that. I mean, on both sides of the fence, right? Like as a salesperson, we save time from not wasting time with someone that doesn't really want to give us their time, you know, or whatever, not a good fit, whatever the case may be. And then from the prospect standpoint as well, like you said, getting people out the office, that's a challenge because if I want to be there and I'm there, then I'm already in, you know? But trying to get me to leave is not hard. But for other people, I can see how that could totally be like a real challenge for people.
I want to comment on a word you used.
Yes.
Just now. I think you nailed it. The word is qualification. Using the tool to qualify the prospect, and the prospect, as you said, is using the tool to qualify if in fact they want to spend any time with this rep.
Everything's becoming so much more efficient. Like the fact that Zoom has been around, I'm not even sure how long Zoom's been around. It's been around for a while.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think we were talking about it previously is, you know, at least I've been using it for at least a year and a half, almost 2 years, but it's been here. And Google Meeting has been here, and there's other platforms that also do the exact same thing. Zoom kind of won I feel like Zoom's winning the whole branding move, you know? But now everything's being fast forward. So, you know, when we think about skill sets that different salespeople really should be trying to bake into this, you know, next year or so, or moving forward, really, what's some really big skills you think like a good salesperson should definitely embody? Is that going to change at all, or will those skills kind of be the same? But let me kind of get you to answer the very first question as far as skills that salespeople ought to be bringing to the table.
One thing that I've learned in the last 5 years, which is a game changer for me, is that only 40% of selling success is based on actual sales skills. Sales, I'll tell you what the other 60 is in a second.
Yeah, please.
Stay tuned. Yeah. Stay tuned. But let me just point out sales skills. What are they? The ability to ask great questions.
Yeah.
The ability to listen. The ability to understand industries. Top salespeople today take a shotgun approach. They focus on specific industries and they study and they learn the trends and the issues that are going on in those industries so that when they make contact, they're prepared to have an intelligent conversation. Right? Those are some of the selling skills. Leaving a poignant voicemail, writing an email that cuts to the chase, that provides value. Those are selling skills. The other 60% of success is between the rep's ears. It's what's up in their head. I've worked with hundreds and hundreds of reps, and the ones that are successful are wired in a certain way. They believe in themselves. They believe that they're helping. They study. They are tenacious. They follow up. Following up is probably one of the most important skills. because the day of the one call close there are some transactional products, mm-hmm. mainly they're consumables and supplies that can be sold in one call. But most other more complex B2B products, it takes multiple visits and multiple conversations. So that means that area, 99%, if not 100% of the sales are made in the follow-up process. So many reps are making a mistake. They're calling and going, hey, Joe, it's leaving a voicemail. Hey, Joe, it's Dwayne Cashin. Hey, what I sent you that proposal. What do you think? You like it? Give me a call back, Joe. Yeah. You don't call back. I call back in 3 days. Hey, Joe, it's Dwayne. Hey, I left you a bunch of emails and voicemails, and you're not getting back to me. What's going on, Joe? Give me a call. Delivering no value whatsoever, becoming an annoyance. Mm-hmm. Following up is an art and a science. Finishing up, the mental DNA is important. The issue of confidence, the ability to handle rejection, the ability to control one's emotions, the ability, as you pointed out, to discuss money. Those are all functions of the mind and how we think. So one has their mental DNA squared away, and they have the selling skills. Those are the people that rise to the top, and they really don't have a lot of competition.
I love that. I love that the most, honestly. And that whole art of the follow-up is a skill that, I mean, it really is an art form too. I mean, it's there's some technical pieces, but there is an art play that is really interesting. I would love to get your thoughts a little bit more deeper about, you know, instead of jumping on the call and say, hey, do you like those numbers? Do you like the quote? Did you get it? We everybody knows that they got it because we got the email notification, right? I mean, so we know that they got it, but we're calling, acting like we don't know that they got it. Like, what's some different ideas or thoughts that maybe you would teach your actual team about how to kind of follow up properly? Right before we jump into today's episode, I want to tell you about the latest newsletter that we have, Marathon Selling Running Club. So it's a different way that I'm building community, right? I'm a runner. I hate running, but I decided to get out there because, you know, you got to get your fitness up, and the gyms are still closed here in Cali. So I'm back on the hitting the pavement again. I did a marathon a couple years ago, and I'm bringing it back. So I'm going to run through my training routines, and I'll be sharing my workouts as well as just sharing what people are doing throughout the community. So I want to just make this more so an engagement place, more so where we can keep each other accountable, as well as talk about the latest sales and growth strategies. So if you're interested in learning more or jumping on that, it's totally free. No, nothing that you got to pay to kind of be involved or any of that. Just trying to make sure that we bring some like-minded people together around building businesses as well as building healthier bodies. So go over to joealexlemon.work or you go to salesculture.work. Or of course, I'll have a link right in the show notes. All right, let's get into today's conversation.
Well, it all starts with understanding the buyer's compelling reason to buy. For example, I have a lawn care company. And when I started working with them, I asked the sales reps, this is one of America's most successful lawn care companies, privately held. Wow. And they are really awesome. The company is amazing. The culture is so healthy. So I'm asking the reps, hey, why do people buy lawn care? And they looked at me like it was kind of a silly question. Well, Dwayne, they want a beautiful lawn. They want green grass. They don't want brown spots. That's what they buy. That's not what they buy.
Right.
What they buy is they buy, let's say they want to sell their house. And right now, if they put a for sale sign out, they'd get about 20 grand less for the house because the lawn is terrible. So they're going to write a check for lawn care to the right company because they got to get that lawn looking fantastic so they can sell the house for maximum value.
Right.
Maybe they're an older couple that's been loving to take care of their lawn for many years. And now they're at an age where physically they can't do it, but they're still healthy and they still have pride in their lawn. So they want to maintain it. So they hire a professional lawn care company. Those are compelling reasons. And sales reps have to ask enough right questions to uncover with everyone they talk with. They have to find out the why behind the why. Okay, now, when they find that, that tees up all kinds of great information that they can be sending via email and voicemail. I call it storyline prospecting.
Storyline prospecting.
Every call should have a piece of information. Joe, I found this great article about how to prepare one's lawn when they're looking to sell their house. I thought I would send that to you. I look forward to talking with you about it. Hey, Joe, Dwayne Cash, and I hope you enjoyed that article on how to prepare your house. Here's an article that talks about a percentage of increase in value that a beautiful lawn. The point is, if you focus on someone's compelling reason, you can go into Google and you can just find an enormous amount of great content. And now every phone call, every voicemail, email's got a sliver, a little slice of information that shows that this guy really cares.
Yeah.
This guy listened to me. Information is relevant to me. I really am beginning to like this guy. Next time he calls, I'm going to talk with him, or I'm going to shoot him back an email. I'm either going to tell him, Dwayne, whoa, man, you're doing a great job. I'm just not ready.
Right.
Or I'm going to say, Dwayne, call me in 20 days. Or Dwayne, let's call on the calendar now. The bottom line is, by continuing to serve, we will earn an honest answer from a reasonable person.
100%. Yeah, you know, things...
It's so simple.
You know what? It's a really simple mindset, but man, it's profound though. Because a lot of the, you know, anxiety about asking for money and, you know, going in for the close, quote unquote, or whatever makes you anxious about the sale, being turned down, rejection. If you come into it and you really understand where you fit in the marketplace and how you can best serve people, I mean, it's literally a total flip of the mind where a lot of that anxiety leaves you. You're like, hey, I'm just here trying to do the best I can do to help you out. And if I'm not helping, I'm gone, right? You know, because I don't want to be a part of that conversation, right? So, you know, are people grasping this, or is it something that's kind of hard to kind of teach and hard for people to kind of understand and hold on to? I'm just curious about how reps are taking this process in.
When I said it is, the concept is very simple.
Yeah.
Let's keep serving up information that's relevant to their compelling reason. Let's demonstrate our desire. Let's earn their respect. The concept is simple. The execution of it takes work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm working with a couple right now to create the library for the storyline process. And I call it storyline because when you're reading a good book and the characters are really believable and the conflict is like, what's going to happen? And you just can't stop reading it, right? That's a story that's pulling you in. I'm suggesting in our voicemails and emails that we learn their compelling reason and then we tell a story around their compelling reason. We point out, first of all, the benefits of embracing, and then we point out the challenges and the consequences if they don't take action. And that pulls them in. That's why I call it storyline. To build a library of content, articles, videos, to build that takes time, and one has to stick with it because it gets really tedious.
Yeah.
And very few reps want to do this because it's work. But when the leader says, we're going to do this,
yeah,
and the leader assigns, Mary, you have it for next Friday. Tony, you go get one video. Alice, you go get a couple pieces of info on the competition. When you divvy it up and everybody's contributing, they get involved and you can build that library fairly quickly. And now a representative becomes highly efficient. Remember, they're focused on a vertical market. Mm-hmm. All of this content is usable for any company in that vertical market. So now we're becoming really efficient while we're raising the quality of the information. You put increased quantity of touches, increased quality together, and now you become a prospecting machine.
I love that. You know, and literally this is how for a lot of companies I've worked with, it's taken me time to go through this process because normally I'm working with small shops and it's me and maybe one other guy that I hired down the line. But it's taken me, you're right, it is a process to build up that actual content. What's the amount of time that you try to recommend that someone, you know, builds a pretty good inventory, I mean, of like content? Like how much time do you think people ought to commit to it? Is it years? Is it months? Is it weeks? Like just trying to give people like a proper outlook on what that would look like.
I think it's a couple months, you know, and the beauty of it is you can build it piece by piece by piece.
Sure.
If you go to Google and say, how many contacts does it take today to get a prospect's attention?
Yeah.
You'll see it's between 7 and 15. So I'm suggesting that we all have at least 7 touches. And a touch, by the way, has 2 components. It always starts with a phone call, always. Because after all, we want to get somebody on the phone.
Right.
So that's why it starts with a phone call. And we're prepared with a voicemail. And the voicemail just talks about one point, one relevant learning point. In that voicemail, it's got to be brief. We tell them that we're now going to send an article, send a link to a video. And we tell them what the subject line is going to be for that email. So when they see that email coming, it increases the chances of them opening. They go, oh, yeah. That's the email that guy told me he was going to send. He sounded okay. I think I'll open it. It's not perfect, but it increases the odds. Now they open it, and it ties right into the message on the voicemail. And the second one and the third, you have to have 7 of those.
Wow.
They all link. Now, at the 7th one, what I do is I say, you know what, Bill or Joe, you haven't gotten back to me. And I'm not looking at that in a negative way, Joe. I'm guessing that you're just really busy. I'm going to stop for now. I'm going to wait a couple weeks, and then I'm going to contact you. And if in the meantime I can be of help, please reach out to me. But thank you very much. And by the way, Joe, I hope you've been finding value in the information I've been giving you. My motivation is to help you. I look forward to talking with you, Joe. Right? And you'd be surprised how many people respond. They go, you know what? Hey, man, I'm sorry. That information was helpful. I'm just not ready. I'm not interested. Or call me in 20 days or let's have a conversation. Isn't that what we want? We want to know where we stand.
Always. Yep. I think that's brilliant.
Does that answer?
Yeah. Yeah.
Question?
I'm just sitting here trying to bite my tongue because honestly, I think that whole storyline is brilliant. It's a brilliant way to go about it, to have the multiple touches around the same, well, different channels. So you're touching them on over the phone and touching them over email, but the same message aligned. I haven't heard that one before. That's a good one because literally having them, you know, giving that, prepping them basically for what's in the email is automatically, I'm sure, going to boost open rates. And then
it does.
And then now you're already 2 touches in on the same piece of information. And so you're just locking them in a little bit more. So I love that process, man. Love that workflow.
And some of the voicemails were asking them a difficult question. You know, Joe, in the medical industry, do you ever get frustrated that you can't capture anybody's attention because they're so busy?
Yeah.
If that's the case, let's have a conversation because I have ideas to get attention in the medical industry.
You're asking questions in the voicemail?
Absolutely.
Love it.
Have you ever thought about how much time you spend trying to reach people and what the percentage return is? Hey, it's Dwayne Cashin. I'm going to send you an email right now with a link article that will give you some insight into that. I really look forward to working with you, Joe. I'm not leaving my phone number because they're not going to call me.
Right.
If I've got their email, they already have my email. Yeah. I'm just going to keep giving them information and I'm going to challenge them. And I want them to see, I want to talk to this person.
I love that. I love everything about that, you know, because for one, it's coming from a position of power and not like a position of neediness, please call, sir. I need money, help me. You're not coming with that tone. You're coming as a guy that says, hey, I have information, and if you're interested, let's talk, no pressure, but this is what I have going on, and I'm helping people. I'm here to serve, right?
Let's talk about that just for a second, because earlier we talked about 60% is what's up here.
Yes.
You just highlighted one of the weaknesses, and that is a representative presenting themselves from a place of need.
Yes.
That's a mental and emotional weakness. Hmm. Our job is to give. Our job is to help, is to serve. And along with that, sometimes we have to ask some tough questions. And if they're appropriate, and if we're polite about it, and if we built up enough familiarity.
Yeah.
You don't ask the tough question in the first email or the second. You ask it around the fourth.
Okay.
Think of it like you're making deposits into the bank account of the prospect. And when we've made enough deposits, we then can withdraw. And that's asking a really tough question.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. I'm a fan of this. I'm really a fan of this model, especially this tough time, our tough conversation topic. Because it's those conversations that have made and broke opportunities for me, you know, like level setting and being, having a clear conscience about what you're doing through and through is something that has been mandatory for me. Otherwise it shows, like, I'll come from a weak position or you're desperate because there's some cloudy judgment in there. But when there's 100% clarity, I know what I'm doing. I know what I can provide. And I know that I don't want to overstep and try to mispromise or overpromise, underpromise, whatever. Those are the best conversations, because then the tough calls are just—they're just tough calls, and that's it, you know. So, tough times we're in right now. And sorry for bouncing around here, but I really want to kind of pull this out of you, because once we were talking previously, you actually brought up how you built your business. I think it was back during 01, right? Or during the 01 downturn, around the whole crisis and everything. Do you mind kind of sharing that story, talking about stories? I think this would be really good for the audience to hear, because they might be feeling some very, very similar things you might have felt back then, if you don't mind.
Well, I was working at Sprint. I had an executive position run a sales organization, and I had gotten to the point where I wanted to do something on my own. I felt like I learned enough about business where I was ready to become an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And I didn't quite know what business I wanted to go in. So I started doing research, and I found these printing machines that print banners on vinyl. And the machine is 16 feet wide, and it can print a big banner, 16 feet by 100 feet with no seam in it.
Jeez.
And I thought that was interesting. And I started reading and learning about it. I saw these things at NFL Super Bowls, and I saw them in baseball fields and churches and backdrops for Broadway shows and avenue banners and floor graphics and wrapping vehicles. I said, this is cool. I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. So I got financing. I bought a machine that cost $750,000. I got 5,000 square foot of space to put this thing in. Had to get a sewing machine. Had to get some computers. Had to hire one employee. And I'm $900,000 in debt. My accountant told me, don't do this. You're going to go bankrupt. Because my bride, Julie, was a stay-at-home mom. I had two children under the age of 10. I was the only income. So the house was on the line, savings, everything I own.
Wow.
And God bless my wife, man. She's always been behind me. And she said, do it. You're going to do it. You're going to do a good job, Dwayne. I said, I'm gonna give it everything I have. She goes, I know you will. Let's do it. I fired my accountant. I said, you're very negative. You're not being supportive. I don't even think you're qualified to be giving me advice right now, frankly. So thanks a lot. I'll see you later. And I went ahead with it. And the first year was really brutal. It was brutal. And then we started to get some traction. And I ran that company for 9 years, put the first banner on Radio City Music, New York City. Wow. And banners at the 2002 Winter Olympics, did big backdrops for Broadway shows, all kinds of stuff. And finally, I said, I'm going to go teach other people how to do this. And I sold the company and I started my consulting firm. And I guess the thing that, you know, I learned from it, my feeling was justified. If you understand the art and science of selling, mm-hmm. you have a market that has a need, and you have a good quality product with a decent margin, you can be a success. You don't need to think about it forever. You can. You need selling skills, people skills. You need a market that has a need. You need the equipment and the ability to deliver at a profitable level. If you've got those three things, you're good to go.
You're in business.
It's going to be rough.
Talk about that first year a little bit, if you don't mind disclosing a little bit of how that first year growth process was. Did you have sales systems in place by that point, or were you building them and developing them in that year one?
Well, at that point, I had been in selling and leadership for, I think, about 14 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I had a lot of experience. And one of the things I learned at Sprint was process.
Yeah.
You know, these Fortune 500 companies, they're all about process. And I learned a lot. And I began, you know, implementing. And that's what it was. I was the sales guy. Mm-hmm. I was the, you know, president. I'm running it. I'm selling. Working 7 days a week, you know the drill.
Yep.
And yeah, man, we started getting traction. You know, the first year the thing about the first year that was so brutal is we didn't know how to finish banners. In other words, when you sell a banner, a big banner, it might be going outside. It probably is. And you've got to deal with the rain, the wind. And we didn't know how to finish them with webbing all around and grommets and all that stuff. So we're making banners and giving them to customers, and the customers are calling the next day and going, Dwayne, there was a rainstorm last night with wind. The banner is shredded.
Mm.
You guys don't know what you're doing. And I said, well, I apologize, we didn't finish it properly. And I reprint it at no cost and finish it at no cost and deliver it at no cost. And some of those early customers that we made mistakes with, because we took full responsibility, they became lifelong friends and customers.
That's
it cost me a lot of money.
That's one of those great lessons, though. You know, I mean, because obviously you already had the whole sales system in place because you had experience doing that. And a lot of the business, like lots of the small business guys that I work with, they don't have that experience. They're just servants at heart, people in healthcare, right? But they're looking to implement and build these profitable clinics, and mm-hmm. they don't have the actual process there. So you know, I think being ready for anything that's going to happen, I think is a beautiful way. And you taking that hit, even I'm sure it was tough, but you made it out on the other side. Well,
yeah.
Well, so you know what, Dwayne, we are about to wrap up, but I want to hear about your business now. Tell me what projects you're working on and your actual agency, because I think you're doing some really, really cool work.
Well, I get most satisfaction from working with privately held companies. I have five clients now that are all privately held companies. They're in different markets, different businesses. And I help the leaders, the owners and presidents put the process in place that is right for their business in their market at this point in time. And those systems are how to identify a good salesperson, how to onboard them, how to ramp them up, what quotas to give them, what KPIs to monitor, what commission plans look like so that the company benefits and the rep is motivated by that. Enablement tools to use such as CRM, talk about marketing. We talk about how to coach a rep. I help them put a playbook together, a sales and a sales management playbook with all of these systems. And then I coach them in implementation and then I'm out of there.
That's those are the actual keys to actually winning on the field, though. I feel like, especially, I got to ask you about this one, and I know we're getting ready to kind of button things up, but coming up with the right comp plan and the right and the right KPIs, I feel like is constantly evolving in sales, and one of the headaches that just comes with the job, I feel like, you know, you have to know that your comp plan is going to shift every once in a while, and things are going to move, and you may kill it one way because you found a nice little hack to kind of win, and then you have to, you know, things will be retooled. What's your thoughts on coming up with the right KPIs as well as finding a good commission structure that's going to keep everyone motivated?
Mm-hmm. Well, it starts out with the company being very clear on their go-to-market plan. Hmm. Are they going to stay within one market? Are they going to have two markets? What are the products they're bringing out? What are the margins of those products? You know, what's the sales cycle? You figure all that out. What does the company want to achieve in gross sales and in profit? You get those numbers out in front of you, and then you look at what the salaries are and incomes in that market, right? Because you can learn that. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of engineer the comp plan. The comp plan has probably four different elements. One is a base salary. The other is a commission, a percentage based on sale. The other one is bonus to drive specific behavior. You know, go sell X of these new machines we have, and I'll give you a bonus. Mm-hmm. That helps to focus and drive people. And then you look at the level of expertise of your reps, and you take these components and you build a page that is both profitable for the company and inspirational for the rep. Now here's, I'll finish with this. There's been a big change in the last 10 years with how reps are motivated.
Yeah.
Years ago, sales reps were all about the money.
Yep.
Money, 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 trips, toys, money.
Yep.
That's extrinsic. Now, many people, I'm guessing around your age, millennials and in and around that area, they're not all about the money. Oh, they need to make money and they want to make money, right, but they want to work at a cool place. They want their opinion. They want to be able to provide their opinion and be involved in decisions. Hmm. They want to see some growth. That's not all about a big fat compensation plan. You know, so companies today have to be really smart and create a comp plan that delivers intrinsic value as well as monetary value.
I love that. I love that. It's true. It's true. Things have definitely shifted. We all still want to make money, but how we go about it in the process is definitely different, you know, and I think it's evolved for hopefully less stress. If there's salespeople in the right area and they're in the right, and they're in a really good industry where they feel like they're actually helping and serving people, hopefully that will take some of the pressure off. And maybe you don't make as much, but you're doing what you love. And maybe that's the win, you know, which I think is also just as important, right?
Yeah. And more millennials are focused on mastery. They want to be mentored by someone that they respect and they want to grow.
That's a good point. It's a great point. Dwayne. Yeah, man. I mean, I'm learning a lot from you here. I mean, one, the mastery point is definitely very true, because you're right. There's a saying out there, people don't leave companies, they leave managers, right?
And that's true.
You know, and if you're with bad management or someone that you just don't jive with, then things kind of get thrown off and you're ready to leave. Well, Dwayne, all right.
Hey, Hey, before we leave, you want to hear a really cool quote?
Absolutely.
I got a good book here. You know, Lao Tzu. So this is interesting. The master of the art of living makes little distinction between his work and his play, his labor and his leisure, his mind and his body, his education and his recreation, his love and his religion. He simply pursues his vision of excellence in whatever he does, leaving others to decide whether he is working or playing. To him, he is always doing both. Is that cool?
Love that quote. So, all right, tell us the book and tell us like who's the author and everything, because yeah, I love that quote.
This is in Jack Daly's book, Hyper Sales. Jack Daly is amazing. And that quote is a very old one from Lao Tzu, L-A-O-T-Z-U. Mm-hmm. Am I saying it right? Lao Tzu?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. He's with The Art of War, right?
Yeah. I think so, yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah. That's really cool. I love that quote because you're right. There's very little difference between how this should be. What you're optimizing life, right?
It's not easy though, right?
Oh man, it's not easy. So Dwayne, this has been great having you on, but you have to tell everybody how to find you and any other projects or any other activities that people might be interested in coming up.
Well, you can go to my website. It's cashinsales.com. And my email is Dwayne@cashinsales.com. And if I can help anyone, I hope they'll help.
Awesome. And so, you know what, please go to his LinkedIn page as well. I'll have that in the whole show notes. That's how we linked up, I believe, on like LinkedIn. And
yes.
Cash and Sales. I mean, I can't think of a better name for sales besides cashing it in. So Dwayne, this has been great.
A lot of people will go, hey, is that your real name or did you make that up?
Yeah. I mean,
it's my real name.
It's perfect. It's perfect, man. So you're obviously doing what you were like meant to do.
Maybe.
Well, Dwayne, thank you again so much for coming on the actual podcast.
My pleasure, Joe. Really enjoyed being with you. You take care.
You as well. Boom.